Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. We need it, and we have got more of the same for you today. I'm really excited about my guest today. Today, my guest is Lee Peoples. Now, you may recognize that last name as the same as a guest that we had previously in June. On June 27th, to be exact, we had Sandra Peoples, who talked about her family's journey with special needs. And we've got Lee here today to give us the other perspective from a dad, from a husband. And we're going to talk about that. Now, Lee grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina. He attended North Carolina State University, graduated from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary in 2007 with his Master of Divinity degree, and in 2016 with his Doctorate of Ministry degree. Before Lee entered the ministry, he was a high school history teacher, a high school basketball coach, and athletic director. He has served as the lead pastor of churches in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Texas, and he is passionate about discipleship, evangelizing, and serving the local community. He also enjoys reading, grilling, and watching professional wrestling. Lee, that is something we do not have in common, but you know, here we are, and that's good. We want your perspective. So welcome, Lee. We're so glad to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for having Sandra on and myself on. And I love how you introduced her, because in the disability community, I am known simply as Sandra's husband, and I'm glad to bear that title.
Well, I love it. And, you know, it does. It takes a team. And we were so grateful to hear Sandra's perspective, you know, growing up in a family, experiencing special needs, and then having the unexpected journey with you and your own children. But we want to hear about your story and your Christian testimony, Lee. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to know the Lord.
Sure. I grew up in a home where we were very regular church attenders. Grew up in the church that my mother grew up in, that her mother was actually a founding member of back in the 1940s in downtown Raleigh. It was a Methodist church, and so that's kind of where my faith foundation was laid. And one night in my bedroom when I was 14 years old, I just kind of call it my light bulb moment. I realized that I had grown up hearing about Jesus, but never had really come to know Jesus as my personal Savior. So there in my bedroom one night, I just prayed to receive Christ and said, I'm ready to follow you, Jesus. And I ended up kind of in the Baptist world, if you will. When I was in my early 20s, I started reading my Bible more and fell under the conviction that baptism is after salvation. So I said, well, I need to go get baptized. And I guess that makes me a Baptist now.
we'll accept it.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, life has not always been easy, but having Christ as my Savior and just that faith foundation just really gives hope for today and, of course, for tomorrow and all of eternity, that nothing that we go through is too big for God to handle in our lives. And so just really, really blessed to have parents, like I said, to take us to church and bring us to church and instill that foundation in. And it's been just an awesome journey to follow the Lord through it all.
And so how did you end up becoming a pastor?
So I was a high school basketball coach. Ever since I was little, when I was probably about 10, 12 years old, I understood that my MBA career would be non-existent. I thought, you know, I love basketball. So ever since I was about 12, I wanted to be a college basketball coach. That was my dream. And so I actually started when I was 18 coaching as an assistant coach at the high school I attended as a senior. And you know, when I was about 24, I started feeling a call into ministry. I loved what I was doing. I was at a Christian school and, you know, seeing great fruit and impact, and just began praying, God, is this what you want me to do in your kingdom? Like, what's the greatest kingdom impact that we can have? And the Lord put that on my heart, and I said, no way. I'm afraid of crowds. I don't really like people. And so that's really two bad things for a pastor to have. You know, you don't like crowds and you don't really like people. And I began talking to some other pastors I knew, and they just kept telling me, they said, if there's anything else you love to do, go do that. Don't do ministry. And
so
at first I was like, I don't understand that. But now 20 years into ministry, I get that piece of advice. And so I took about a year to just kind of pray and explore it. And it felt, you know, the call never left, the desire never left. And so finally said, yes, I want to be a pastor. And the Lord has obviously changed my heart. I love people. I love crowds. I love any chance now I get to talk to people about Jesus. And you know, the desire to coach and all that is gone. The competitiveness is still there, but that's another radio interview, right?
Right. Well, you know, I love you being so authentic about it. And it reminds me of biblical examples. I mean, the most well-known probably being Moses being sent as a spokesperson saying, oh, not me, Lord. No, I am slow of speech. Yeah. I'm slow of tongue. Like, no.
Yeah.
But, you know, it reminds me again of that verse from Psalm, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Now, that is not a prescription for, oh, yes, delight yourself in the Lord, and he's going to make you a pro basketball player. It is, he changes our desires. He morphs our desires as we follow him. And, you know, actually, Lee, my youngest son was able to meet Scott Drew, and of course, the Baylor basketball coach, right after he won the national championship. And my son told him, oh, I am going to be the best basketball player that the college has ever had. He was probably 12. Now, my son is not tall at all. He is not. And so Scott Drew told me, well, I don't know about basketball, but you've given this kid confidence. I'll take parenting advice.
That's right.
That's like my claim to fame right there in the basketball world. But, you know, Lee, we heard Sandra share y'all's story of having a son diagnosed with autism and pretty severe autism. And I would love to hear your perspective. What was that like? Take us on that journey and tell us your side of the story as a dad.
Sure. And you know, so just to kind of back up with our oldest, who's our typical, David is, you know, 18 now. It was so funny. When we found out we were having a boy, I was kidding people to say, I'm going to make my son a lefty. You know, I'm going to make him a left-hander because as a pro, you know, baseball player, if he's a pitcher, he just needs a good fastball and an off-speed pitch. And we're there, you know, and people are like, you can't make a kid a left-hander. I was like, oh, no, you can't, you know. And so David is a natural lefty. And I thought, oh, my goodness, the Lord has smiled upon us, like our first boy, and he's a lefty. And David does nothing with sports. He's been our theater kid, and he does all kinds of theater. And and so just kind of it was funny watching him develop and grow and grow into those passions because my doctorate is actually in sports evangelism, how churches can use sports to share the gospel. And so just kind of watching him through that journey, I was like, okay, Lord, that was funny. You know, like you give us a natural lefty that does nothing with sports. And then you know, and then James comes along, and he's diagnosed at 3. And our joke in our family is, like, James would have been our athlete. Like, he is strong, he's crafty, he's sneaky. Like he would have been it. And he would have been my point guard, you know. And so, you know, when he was diagnosed, he's diagnosed at 3. And I think what I have learned over the years is you just learn to love your kids for who they are. And not, you know, as parents, we always have dreams and things we want to see our kids do and desire. But what David taught me is, like, I was thinking I would always be a sports dad. Well, now I'm a theater dad, you know, and now I'm like, hey, man, next time Les Mis comes through Houston, like, let's go watch Les Mis, you know, and you know, and so I would have never in my wildest dreams thought I would have fallen into the theater world and enjoyed that. You know, and so I think with James, what I've had to learn as a dad is just to love my son for who he is. And there's times you do mourn milestone moments, you know, like when he turns 16, it's, we understand he'll never drive. He'll never drive a car. He'll never have that. So you take those moments to mourn the milestones that are missed. But you don't stay in that mourning. You know, there's still so much to rejoice in who he is and what he does and how he makes you laugh. And so just kind of over the years, I've had to learn how to rejoice in who he is as a person. And it's just taught me so much about how to serve people and love people. And so I've said over the years, he has changed my world, because he has made me a better dad and more importantly, a better follower of Christ. Because he's taught me more about, you know, how to love, and what love looks like than anyone ever has.
I mean, what a testimony and what a testament to him and to David and to the specialness of his life, you know, being fearfully and wonderfully made. But, you know, Lee, honestly, listening to your journey, it's so great to hear where you are. But I'm sure there were points where it was really hard. And I don't want to be overly prescriptive and stereotypical, but men in general,
sure,
like to fix things, right? Like, what was it yeah, like to have this happen? And then especially to see your wife and how she's processing it in a different way maybe than you are. And where are some points, some learning points along that journey that you came? What are the hard places where God met you? And what did you learn about God's character?
Yeah, I think when he was first diagnosed, Sandra was probably in fix-it, you know, fixed mode a little faster than I was. Mm-hmm. And we both knew kind of going into the diagnosis appointment that that was more than likely the diagnosis. And so when we got the diagnosis, it wasn't a surprise. It was kind of more like we had a name to what we were seeing now. Like, oh, mm-hmm, okay, you know, and the processing of it, I think, took me a little longer. And she just one day was like, here's what it is and here's what we're doing. Like, get on board type thing. And, you know, because that's just Sandra. When she gets her mind on something, it's just like, watch out. I mean, you're not stopping. You're not changing. You go with it. And so I think over the years, there have been times where I have struggled with, God, is this fair? God, how is this good? I think those struggles came when he was younger, you know, because when he's at home, he's James. But then when he goes in public and you see him around his peers, especially when he was younger, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, at home, it's just who he is. But then when he gets around the typical peers, then you go, oh, wow. Yeah, my kid is radically different, you know. And that was hard at first, you know. I don't struggle with that as much anymore. But, you know, when he was younger, that would hit harder, you know, the birthday parties and things where, you can really tell he's not typical around the peers. And, you know, he's 16 and he plays with Thomas the Train now, and that's fine. You know, like, I don't get upset about those things anymore to be like, well, no, you're 16. You shouldn't be playing with trains. You know, it's like, no, that makes him happy. And so, I think there's still seasons where we go through some changes sometimes in behavior or you know, medicines and things that obviously bring some different side effects that we have to wade through. And those are hard days. But it's just now being through the journey we've gone through, it's learning, you know, in pain, I have learned when we go through suffering, I've really stopped asking the why questions of why we suffer. I'm learning to ask, okay, when suffering comes, who can I turn to and what can I believe? Well, I can turn to God and I can believe what the Bible teaches me about who he is and his character and his love and his grace and the strength he provides. And so I think over the last few years, that's been kind of a radical shift for me, is not focusing so much on the why, which are a lot of unanswerable questions, but who can I go to and what can I believe about the Bible?
Well, that is a great question. And Lee, I have a lot more questions when we come back. So don't go away. We'll be right back with more from Lee Peoples right after this break. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
See, on the hill of Calvary, my Savior bled for me. My Jesus set me free. And look at the wounds that give me life, grace flowing from His side. No greater sacrifice. What He's done. Forgiven. My future is heaven. I praise God for what He's done.
Well, we are praising God for what He has done. That song is called What He's Done by Passion. And today we're talking to Lee Peoples, a pastor who is sharing what God has done in his life and having a son with special needs. And Lee, I'm just in awe of the way that God has directed your journey. And so many times, you know, I think many are the plans in a man's heart, but it is the Lord who determines his steps. And we have so many thoughts of how our journey in parenting will be. And God just has a different story. And I have to apologize. I think I mixed up your son's names, and I wish that I could say I don't do that with my own kids, but I do. So okay. I'm sorry. I've just carried on my life into yours. But you know, you were just sharing right before the break, Lee, some really poignant perspective about your perspective shift and not asking, you know, God about why, but what He's teaching you, who can you turn to. And that is really absolutely amazing. What is it like to be a pastor? Because, you know, I talk to a lot of pastors on this show, and pastors are struggling as a group. It's really hard in following COVID and the divisiveness that happened there, and in today's political climate. What is it like? What are the special needs that you may have pastoring a church for their needs, but also having a family that has some special needs?
Yeah, I think kind of where the Lord has shifted our hearts and what we've seen Him do within our church is the more vulnerable I have been able to be in kind of at times in the pulpit or just in talking in personal levels. And vulnerability to a point, obviously, as a pastor, is it's opened up more conversations within our church of different needs that people have. So for instance, and I have shared publicly with our church at times that, you know, over the course of my spiritual journey, there's times I have battled depression and I have gone to counseling and I've seen counselors for anxiety and, post COVID, you know, during some stressful situations, I actually had an anxiety attack for the first time in my life and had no idea what that was and how to deal with that. And, you know, and I've been to some biblical counselors. And so I think in this period and in this time and this climate where we are, to show just kind of as pastors, we are real human people that mm-hmm. have struggles and vulnerability. When we are vulnerable and just honest and authentic with that, it has just opened up our church to more of those conversations. And I'm not a counselor, and so I don't do a lot of those type of counselings. But I would say, you know, I've been a pastor for 20 years now. In the last 2 years, we have referenced out more counseling, you know, from our congregation than I ever have in ministry. And so now in our local area, we've actually come alongside some good biblical counselors and tried to form partnerships with them to help funnel, you know, people who need help to them as well. And so I think, you know, some of that struggles, being a special needs dad and a pastor, really just show our people, like, yeah, I really struggle with things sometimes, and life's really hard. But what we do is we keep going. We keep following the Lord. We keep worshiping God when it's hard. Sometimes when we don't feel like it, we just keep going, because that's what God just calls us to do, is to trust Him in those valley moments of life, and just to continue to learn to find good things happening, even when we see a lot of bad things happening.
I think that's such an encouraging part of your testimony, Lee, is to hear that, yeah, you've been through some hard things. You've had to adjust your expectations on parenting, which Sandra shared in such a beautiful way about how that's brought you unexpected blessings. And you've been blessed by the Lord in parenting in ways that other parents with neurotypical children will not experience. And you can share that, which I think is so beautiful. But to hear you say that a pastor is human, and pastors can have depression, can have anxiety, and looking at all that you've experienced, but to stand on the other side of it and to say, much like that song that brought us back to this segment, look at what He's done, and to say that God is still good, and that you still trust Him, and that your faith is intact. What advice or encouragement would you give to people who are still in the thick of it, who are still maybe back where you were, saying, why? What advice would you have for them to strengthen their faith?
Yeah, I think one of the things I have thought about a lot lately is in Psalm 23, where David says, you know, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, or valley of the shadow of suffering, depending on your translation, I'll fear no evil, for you're with me. And to kind of stop and think, okay, wait a minute, in the moments of hardship that I'm going through, like, the God of the Bible is with me. Like right now. Mm-hmm. And then down in verse 6, he says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I think that we often equate God's blessings only when we get out of suffering. But what David's actually saying there is, like, God's goodness and mercy is following you all the days of your life, not just in the mountaintop moments of life, but like in those deep, dark valleys of hardship that we go through. God's goodness and mercy is still there, following us, leading us. And just so trying to, in my own walk with the Lord, make that turn in my mind to go, yeah, things may be really hard right now, but God's working in ways that I don't always see. And I can trust Him in that because I can look back at all the scriptural examples that we have. But I can also look back at my own life at other points where there was some darkness and hardships. But man, look where I am today, you know, because the Lord's brought me through that, and He'll bring me through it again. And so I think for folks that are in those period of times, those are great faith-building moments. You know, I've always said faith is built not on the mountaintop. Faith's built in the valley. It's built in the moments of hardships and suffering, because that's where you're laying your foundation on your belief in Jesus. It's not in the good times. It's in the hard times. You know what you have, you know, and that's where you can turn and say, who can I turn to? I can turn to God. What can I trust in? I can trust in Him and the promises of the gospel in those moments.
And I just heard you use my favorite phrase in the history of ever, but God. And that's what I think in this world where we will face trials, we will have hardships, but we can take heart, we can be of good cheer because we know that God has overcome the world. And it's hard to do that. And one of the hardest things that we do is parenting. And actually what I've said before is the truth is parenting is actually pretty easy. Parenting well is the hardest thing that you will ever do. It's so hard because you continually have to sacrifice to yourself and nurturing your own faith, just like you've been talking about, Lee. What a great example and testament for your family. And one of the things that I actually saw that you posted on social media that really just captured my heart and a great example of parenting well was recently we had Hurricane Beryl. Our listeners may even still hear some construction noise going on around me as we continue to prepare for that for Houston. But you shared on social media about you going to work, we'll put that in quotation marks, going to work, so to speak, right, in the dark because of your son's needs, what he needed. Can you just tell us about that as a great example of just meeting our kids where they are and dying to yourself and serving others?
Sure. And so one of the jokes that we have in our family is it's James's world, and he just lets us in every so often.
So,
he's very, very routine. And, you know, if routine gets off, anxiety goes up. And so, for instance, if there is a day off of school, Daddy still has to go to work, you know, in his mind. So I'm going to be in my office on Thanksgiving Day for a little while. I will be in my office on Christmas Day for a little while. Am I working? No, I'm probably watching a Netflix show in my office. I'm not working on Christmas Day. But it's for him, it's the routine of me going away for an hour or two and then coming back. And then, you know, we continue on the routine. And that's just something you've had to learn to do, you know. And so in the summer months, I'm in my office or somewhere out of the house 7 days a week for just a little bit. Well, of course, the hurricane's rolling in. We lose power at 4:30 in the morning, which means the internet's down. You know, the phones aren't working right. So he's not able to get on YouTube and, you know, do his, you know, the ways he plays. And so we're sitting there about 7:30, you know, we're having the hurricane pass over. Like, this is hurricane moment here.
And his
his anxiety's way up. It's dark. There's no power. He doesn't conceptually understand we are getting hit with the Category 1 hurricane right now. In his mind, it's, Dad, you're still here. You're not where you're supposed to be, you know? Uh-huh. And so I look at Sandra, and Sandra's like, you know, you have to. I was like, okay. Now, thankfully, we live on campus, so I was safe driving across the parking lot. You know?
Uh-huh.
But it's just what you did. And so, of course, the church didn't have power, so the only power I had was my laptop. So, you know, I opened up my laptop. I opened up my window in my office. I prayed. I watched the hurricane. I listened to a few podcasts until it was safe to go home. But he was, when I left, his anxiety dropped, you know, because we were able mm-hmm. to keep routine. And I think that's something as parents, again, ways we serve our kids to help them. And so another thing that we do on Fridays in the summer, he loves to go to the beach. Rain or shine, we go. And it's you know, about 45-minute drive each way. He stays in the water for 20 minutes. You know, I mean, that's, and he's ready to go. And I've had so many people ask me, they're like, why do you drive over 2.5 hours for him to stay for 20 or 30 minutes in the water? I'm like, because this is what you do for the ones you love. That's like a motto we have in our family. It's what you do for the ones you love. And this makes him happy. This brings him joy. You know, this helps him stay in routine. So why would I not do this? You know, I mean, like, this is what we do. And so, yeah, I came to work during the middle of a category of hurricane because it's what you do for the ones you love.
I absolutely love that. And I, you know, I think about meeting him at his point of need, and you've talked about doing that with James, but also you talked earlier about doing that for David, your older son, mm-hmm. and going to Les Mis and learning to love theater because that's what he loves. And I think that's what a lot of parents miss in building relationships when there is tension or conflict in relationships, meeting your kids where they are, accepting them as God made them as far as their gifting and their temperament temperament and where they are, even if it's so unlike you, it can be such a gift to us. What has that been like? What has David's journey been like and your experience as a father for him, having one kid who has very different needs than the other kid? What has that been like in bringing your family together to meet all needs? Because, you know, for me as a nurse practitioner, I know sometimes kids who have siblings with special needs, they can struggle because those needs are very exhaustive and they can be very demanding. How have you taught David to enter into this world of service?
Yeah, we kind of joke that we have two boys that are 23 months apart, but we have raised two only children, you know, because like you said, their needs are radically different. And so David, in a lot of ways, is an only child in some typical ways. But David, I'm going to tell you, like, if I could go back in time, I would love to be my son as a teenager. I mean, he is just, to me, an incredible kid. He has gone through some hard times, and I think he has had to mature in a lot of ways faster. But to see the way he loves his brother and serves his brother and loves his mom and hopefully loves his dad.
I'm sure.
Yeah, has just been an incredible journey to see. And I think as dad, I've also at times had to play at seasons of life, almost like older brother moments for him, you know? And so there's times I felt like I needed to be almost like a little bit of an older brother. And then there's times I really needed to be dad. And now he's transitioning to college, and I feel like I'm still dad, but now I'm moving more into like mentor mode, you know, and now how can I mentor you to help you think through stages of life and God's calling on your life? And so now it's not so much more me being instructive of things to do and not do, but now helping him form and think through decisions that he needs to make. And so kind of that journey through it has been interesting, because it's not always been typical, you know, with having two, if we would have had two typical boys 23 months apart, you know, I would have probably been referee a whole lot more, you know, than I had to do, you know.
I can attest to that. I have boys who are 2 years apart. And let me tell you, when they get together, their destructive power seem to ignite their creativity, right? That's what they're doing. But every kid is wonderfully unique. And Lee, I think whether your kids have special needs or not, whether they're neurotypical, every kid is different. And you're doing such a great job of modeling what it looks like to parent those children that God has given you to steward. Well, I've got some questions about your church and how churches can partner to make an inclusive environment. And I also want to ask you some questions about generational differences and how we can use one generation to encourage the other. So don't go away. More with Lee Peoples when we come back.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
I love you, Lord. Oh, your mercy never fails me. All my days I've been held in your hands.
till I lay my head, or I will sing of the goodness of God.
Welcome back, friends. Oh my goodness. I love, love, love this song. This is The Goodness of God by Bethel Music and Jen Johnson. And you know, the first time I heard this song, as we're singing lyrics, it can be easy just to sing lyrics without thinking when you're worshiping, whether you're in your car, or whether you're in the church service. But that one lyric stopped me in my tracks. All my life, you have been faithful. And I feel like I stopped and I thought, do I really believe that? Do I really believe that all of my life that God has been faithful? And I started to think of the challenges that I had been through and the broken relationships and the family trauma. And I thought, yes, I could look back and see God's hand through it all, guiding me and leading me. And just as our guest today, Lee Peoples, was sharing earlier from Psalm 23, that surely goodness and mercy will follow us all the days of our lives, and we will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We're talking to Lee Peoples, a pastor from Texas, who is sharing his story of having a son with special needs. And Lee, you have been saying that all throughout our interview, is that God has been faithful, that God has been good. Even as you have walked through valleys, even as you've walked through hard times, that God has been good. And I'm so appreciative of you sharing your story of faith and just modeling for us what it looks like as a dad to have a parenting journey that didn't look anything like you expected, and to embrace it, and to this say, as you said, this is what you do for the ones that you love. You have just done such a great job in talking about that. So just want to give you any last words that you have about your own personal family journey, and then I have some questions for you about your church.
Yeah, I think on our journey, that just coming in from that song, The Goodness of God, is, I don't know if I would have it any other way. Is I think, you know, as Sandra wrote in her book, Unexpected Blessings, that the trials we've gone through and what we go through has made us, I think, better followers of Jesus. And I wouldn't want it any other way. And,
you know, Lee, this is where I have to tell you that my kids make fun of me because they will ask me at the dinner table, Mom, who did you make cry today?
Well,
but it is, this is,
it, yeah,
this
yeah.
is
I'm a
real
crier
stuff.
When it comes to my boys. Yeah. Yeah. yeah I'm
I
a crier
it.
When it comes to my boys. And so it's, again, a family joke we have. We'll be dropping David off in a couple of weeks at college. And we were talking at the dinner table the other night. Sandra asked him and said, well, who's going to cry the most, me or your dad? And David's like, Dad. Like he'll just be crying the whole time. I was like, I will be. And I just think as in my personal journey of faith, both my boys have shaped me. But what I've been able to see God do with James and through Sandra's ministries and opportunities we've had at churches, it's just been a blessing. And it's a hard ride at times, but man, it's a fun ride. it's a joy just to be able to be his dad and get opportunities to share the gospel through his life.
Absolutely. And I mean, these are just the matters of the heart. And when you have been through the valleys, when you've been through times where you're asking the questions, why? And God is still faithful. And you can come out on the other side and say, all my life that he has been faithful, I will sing of the goodness of God. I've already told my kids, Lee, I want this on my tombstone, that I will sing of the goodness of God for sure. Well, we've talked about the, you know, your journey with your family. Let's talk about your journey with your church. because there are some needs that families have to provide an environment where families are coming in and we feel like as a church, oh, we are expected. You expected us mm-hmm. to come. You are ready for us to come. What have you learned as your journey as a dad that has influenced your ministry as a pastor?
Sure. And I think, you know, I tell our church all the time is, you know, you as a church have helped our family find a place where we can be. And so one of the things we encourage with churches and I encourage other pastors is there are a lot of places that I can go with my son. And I know I'm not typical. We're not a typical family. We can feel like outsiders. We can feel uninvited. We can feel like we don't belong. But let's make our churches be places where we feel welcomed, and it's just normal for us to be there. And I think where we are, we've seen that culture change with our disability ministry, that it's just normal. And so I think to help churches and people understand this is the body of Christ, that people with disabilities, they're part of the body. And to have them in our churches is just a normal thing. And, you know, we as a church right now have a young man who is had a battle with cancer as 11-year-old, and he's a quad amputee, and he's in his powered wheelchair every Sunday. But just to watch the kids interact with him, it's just like he's just who he was before his, you know, his surgeries, you know, and, mm-hmm. and they're just playing with him. It's just normal. And mm-hmm. so to figure out how as churches we can create that culture of yeah, people belong, and we're going to make room and accommodations for them.
Absolutely. And, you know, my kids have volunteered before at Vacation Bible School where they've been, you know, special assistants or buddies for kids mm-hmm. who have disabilities or special needs. And it has been one of the best experiences that they have ever had. It gives them so much appreciation for seeing the world in a different way, for mm-hmm. appreciating what their families go through and the service that they go through. But really, they just look at the world in a different way. And there's a lot of laughter that goes along with it, because a lot of times kids with different kinds of special needs are just sometimes more uninhibitedly. And I think sometimes that is really good for us, because kids who are neurotypical are worried about, oh, I don't want to say this, I'm going to look stupid. And then you can just find joy in such little mm-hmm. things, just like you've talked about having birthday parties, you know, that are playing with Thomas the Train. Like, hey, you know, I know some 15-year-olds who would like to do that, honestly, if they weren't worried about what people were thinking. And we learned from Sandra about an inclusive VBS that you were going to have. How did that go? Can you tell us what that was like?
Sure. It went really, really well. We did miss, just Wednesdays in July for a couple of hours on each Wednesday. And we missed the first one because of the hurricane. But we were able to have two, and we had about 15 families on average come. Most of them do not go to church anywhere. And for some, they were like, this is our first VBS that we've ever been able to go to. And so just to have them on campus and to, you know, for a couple of hours as parents, being able to go and relax and do whatever mm-hmm. you need to go do is a blessing to them. But to be able to serve those kids and even some young adults was just such a joy for our church. This was something we've never done as a church. And so it was a big step for us to, you know, we do the typical big VBSs, but then to go, well, how can we, you know, do something differently for this community was really just such a joy. And we actually had one of those families visit yesterday, which was at our service on Sunday, which was just such a joy to see a family that doesn't typically go to church that we connected with the VBS, and they were here on Sunday. So
I think it just gives such a powerful message of, hey, we're ready for you. We want you to come. Mm-hmm. We are equipped and we are prepared, because there are some church environments where it's not. And you think, okay, well, is this environment safe for my child? First of all, physically, is it safe? Is it emotionally safe and nurturing? You know, what is that going to look like? Can I come? Can I sit with my child? Do you have procedures that allow me to do that or to come and get me? You know, if we need that respite care, I just think that's such a beautiful thing that you did. And you know, Lee, regardless of whatever kinds of needs families have, because every family has different kinds of needs, you recently had a sermon where you talked about generational guidance, and we're looking at Gen Z and of course the emergence of Gen Alpha. Gen Alpha is just now, the oldest ones are starting to turn 14. So we're seeing a new generation of teenagers. What do you see that they need, kids today, need from parents and grandparents to influence their worldview and to encourage them in a world that seems consumed by cultural chaos?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I think number one, just authentic relationships. What I love about Gen Z and Alpha is they can spot a phony a mile away.
Yes.
You're not authentic.
100%.
They know you're not authentic. But they respect people who are just authentic. So I think number one, just be authentic. You don't have to have everything figured out. You don't have to have all of the answers at the moment. It's okay to struggle with some things. I think second thing is just grace-filled guidance. You know, the challenges these younger generations are going through, we never had to go through them on the scale they are. And, you know, they're now deciding identity and thinking through identity and who has God created to be and where do I fit in the world? And I mean, even artificial intelligence and how do we relate mm-hmm. to AI? And I mean, goodness gracious, you know, I can remember when we got the internet in my home.
Me too. After I got married.
Yeah, I was like, I told Dave, I was like, we got an email address in college, and that was cool when we got uh-huh. our first email address, you know, and now you have AI, and it's like, oh my, you know, and that's going to just continue to grow. And so how do we relate to artificial intelligence as Christians, and what's right, what's wrong? How do we, you know, just so all those cultural issues that we didn't have to walk through at the scale they are. So I just think grace-filled guidance in helping them think through these questions. I mean, we have answers in Scripture, but to struggle along with them in figuring mm-hmm. those things out, and just to say it's okay to have these conversations. And so one of the things we've built into our home is to say there's no question you can ask us that's off the table. You know, and you ask us, you know, David, whatever you need to ask us. And so we try to tell parents a lot of times is create an environment where you're able to talk with your kids and your teenagers, where they may ask you a question of something they're thinking or struggling with. And yes, that may be shocking, but go be shocked later. Like in that
yes.
moment, respond with grace, respond with, okay, let's talk, let's listen, let's, you know, and then when the conversation ends, then go be shocked privately. You know? but have that relationship where they can feel safe coming, you know, to you on those mm-hmm. things. And I think another thing that these generations needs is just community. They thrive on being together, and I know we can talk through social media and all those things, and there is a level of being connected socially and social media. But they really just want eyeball to eyeball, face to face conversations. And as older generations, what I have found being now the older generation is these teenagers, they want to talk to you. They want to hear mm-hmm. from you, you know, and they want to have those conversations. And so creating kind of environments within our churches and our homes where that's just typical. And then what I also love about the younger generations with Z and Alpha is giving them opportunities to make kingdom impact. They want to serve and they want to be a part of something that's greater than themselves. And so like you had said, you know, with your kids helping out at church with buddies, mm-hmm. you know, a third of our, because we do Vacation Bible School during the day, a third of our workers with Vacation Bible School are our teenagers. If we don't have our teenagers serving, we don't have Vacation Bible School, you know? And and so even in our church, we have teens that serve in the tech booth, on the media team, on the worship team, and our disability ministry. Like, you can find teenagers serving on our campus every Sunday somewhere. And because they want to. They want to have a part in building God's kingdom. And so for us, you know, as an older generation, helping them out with that.
Absolutely. I feel like, Lee, my listeners are going to say, you sent him talking points, because those are the things you say all the time. But it was so validating. Hey, listen, Lee is a pastor and he's a dad, and he's saying the same things I am. I agree 100%. Well, Lee, thank you so much for joining us. If you're interested in his wife Sandra's book, it's called Unexpected Blessings, The Joys and Possibilities of Life in a Special Needs Family. You can get that book, or you can listen to her previous episode. And that was aired on June 27th. Find it at AFR.net or any podcast platform. And listen, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And we'll see you here next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.